Hello and welcome to Speak the Words, a Cosmere podcast. I'm Sean.
And I'm Mango. And I have cotton candy.
You have cotton candy! Everybody clap for the cotton candy. Everybody clap. This is a podcast where I slowly but surely walk Mango through the story of the Cosmere, including the Stormlight Archive, as I have read all of them. And Mango has read about 3 chapters of Mistborn. Currently, we are working on the 3rd book in the Stormlight Archive, Oathbringer. And last time, Mango, how did you feel?
Awful. Thanks for asking.
Wasn't fun, was it?
No, I cried.
Yeah, you did.
I don't think I've cried in this whole podcast.
I don't think you have either. I hate to tell you this. It made me very happy that you cried. It means that it's working. So last time, our crew went and assaulted the Oathgate platform in Kolinar and lost. Elokar died, killed by Moash during the assault. And during it, one of the Unmade, Sajah Anat, communicated with Shallan and told her that the Oathgate platform was trapped. With nowhere else to go, they activated the Oathgate platform anyways and ended up in Shadesmar.
Yep.
And that is where we left off.
That is the only important thing that happened last episode. Nothing else happened last episode. Let's just move on. No one is even more depressed than they used to be. That's not a thing.
Oh, that's true. Kaladin also had a total mental breakdown.
Nothing happened.
I unfortunately have to tell you that we will be continuing that thread tonight.
What thread? Tonight I have no idea what you're talking about.
We will be dealing with the interludes, and we will be dealing with, I think, a couple chapters from part 4 at the beginning. We start with interlude number 7, which is Envoy. It has Venli's symbol, and it begins, Odium's grand purpose for Venli meant turning her into a showpiece. She's telling a crowd of singers the story of what happened to the listeners. It left out the part about Ulim doing most of the work, which was the void spren that she'd been working with. As Odium wanted to present the listeners as a heroic group, with Venli as their brave leader. Venli breaks down the hierarchy of Odium's people, so there's like the normal singers at the bottom. Then there's the regals, who are people like herself who have bonded one of several varieties of void spren. And then there are the fused at the top. She settles down after giving the speech, and one of the singer asks if the tale is true. Venli teaches the singer how to act like a proper one by speaking to the rhythms, and she can't help but notice the difference between these singers and her own people. She feels that these singers are weak in comparison. One of the fused, Rhine, appears and tells her not to be so smug. If the singers are babes, then Venli is a toddler. Venli tells him that they should have human slaves working the fields, and Rhine says that while other fused agree with Venli, they would have to watch the humans constantly in fear of them manifesting surge binders. And Rhine says, It shocked us when it first happened. Humans don't have gem hearts. How could they bond spren? It was unnatural. Yet somehow their bond was more powerful than ours. I always said the same thing and believe it even more strongly now. We must exterminate them. Our people will never be safe on this world as long as the humans exist. Venli returns to the room she'd been staying in at a nearby mansion, and the little comet-like spren appears from her bag. Are you one of them? She asked softly. The spren that move in the sky some nights? It pulsed, sending off a ring of light that dissipated like glowing smoke. Then it began zipping through the room, looking at things. The room isn't any different from the last one you looked at, she said to amusement. I don't know why you stay with me. It can't be comfortable in that bag. The spren zipped past her, looking in the drawer that she'd opened. It's a drawer, she said. The spren peeked out, then pulsed in a quick, blinking succession. That's curiosity, she thought. Curiosity was an old rhythm, like amusement, which she'd attuned moments ago. She could hear the normal rhythms again. She looked at the little spren. Is this your doing? It shrank, but pulsed to resolve. What are you hoping to accomplish? Your kind betrayed us. Go find a human to bother. It shrank further, then pulsed to resolve again. Down below, the door slammed open. Rhine was back already. In the pouch, she hissed to command. Quickly. And that is the end of the chapter.
I have no idea what that's supposed to mean, but okay.
Interlude 8 is titled Mem. It has just kind of the general, character symbol. And it starts with Mem, who is doing in laundry for her employer, Marais. And she has a new assistant named Pom. It took Mem 4 different soaps to get a particularly nasty stain out of Marais's cloak, and they are in Vaidenar, the capital of Yakaved. Mem brought Pom up to Marais's quarters. Palm froze in the doorway. She'd marveled too her first time here. A mantle covered in curiosities, each in its own glass display. Deep rugs from Murat, five paintings of the finest skill, each of a different herald. You were right, Palm said from behind. Of course I was right, Mem said. Marais, remember, he doesn't want to be called master, is of the finest and most refined taste. He employs only the best of... She was interrupted by a ripping sound. Mem turned to find her new assistant standing on a chair, attacking one of Marais's painting with a knife.
Oh.
Palm was... She was destroying one of Marais's paintings. I've been looking for that, Palm said, stepping back and putting hands on hips, still standing on the chair. Two guards burst into the room. They looked at Palm and their jaws dropped. In turn, she flipped her knife about in her hand and pointed it threateningly at the men. Then, horror of horrors, Marais himself appeared behind the soldiers. What is this ruckus? Ah, he said, noticing Palm. Finally, the masterpiece of the Oil Sworn was all it took, was it? Excellent. Marais shoved out the confused guards, then pulled the door shut. Ancient one, would you care for something to drink? Palm narrowed her eyes at him, then hopped off the chair. She walked quickly to Marais and used one hand on his chest to push him aside. She pulled open the door. I know where Telenolot is, Marais said. Palm froze. Yes, let's have that drink, shall we? Marais asked. My Bobisk has been eager to speak with you. He glanced at Mem. Is that my Azish cavalry lord suit? Yes? You got the Aether out of it? The... What? Mem, you are an absolute genius. Not every hunter carries a spear, and this is proof indeed. Go to Conduish and tell him I approve a 3 firemark bonus for you. Thank you, Marais? Go, collect your bonus and leave, Marais said. Note that you will need to find a new washgirl to help you after today. And that is the end of the chapter.
Well,
Marais was waiting for Ash to show up.
That was easy for him.
And he knows where he's going to tell her where Telenolot is, and she seems very interested in that information. Interlude 9 is titled True Labor Begins, and it has Venli's symbol. Venli is being flown across Alethkar and can't help but think of how much Esh and I would have loved to have seen the world from this angle. They arrive at Kolinar, which Venli hadn't seen since the night they had assassinated Gavilar. They land at a bunker outside the city. Am I finished with my work, Ancient One? Venli asked. Is that why you finally brought me here? Done? Ryan asked, said to ridicule. Child, you haven't even begun. Those little villages were practice. Today, your true labor begins. And that is the end of the chapter. Interlude 10 is titled Scheller. It has just the kind of normal person symbol. Scheller is a dude. He is listening as a Herdazian general outlines 3 options for him to take as punishment for an unspecified crime. The general tells him that he can either face the sword, where all the women he abused can take a turn at beheading him, the hammer, in which his arms and legs are broken and he is hung up from a cliff by the ocean, or the hog, in which he is greased and has to wrestle a hog. As the generalist explains, Scheller protests at his treatment, arguing that he was gathering resources because his homeland was under attack and demanding the right of ransom. But he is told that ransom is not available since he was caught robbing and killing civilians. Scheller chooses the hog and is doused in a foul-smelling oil. As an enormous claw breaks the surface of the ocean, he thinks that the hog may have been more of a nickname. And that is the end of the chapter. This chapter isn't super important, but the Herdazian general that is outlining these options is going to come back in the next book. And the big thing to know about him is that he's pretty weird, not in like a special world hopper way, just in like he's eccentric.
It's like, hey, you did bad things. How about every woman you have ever abused gets to kill you?
I think when we're introduced to him in book 4, he's practicing how to hide from his guards. He's just like a weird dude. Like,
I like
he's going to come back though. Yeah, he's fun. I like
him. Well, I like him for like, yeah. Hey, women, kill him.
Yeah. And I think he's good. I like him in Rhythm of War. So I think you'll continue to like him. Interlude 11 is titled Her Reward, and it has Venli's symbol. Venli is sitting in her room with the little Spren who she had named Timber. She was giving presentations 12 times a day to groups of singers that would be brought out of Kolinar to her. She hadn't been allowed inside the city herself. She stops Timber from leaving to explore, telling her that the Fused are watching for Spren like her. She's being pulled in 2 directions by Timber and the Void Spren in her gem heart. And she wonders if she could join the Fused if she just committed herself to Odia. Everyone had always said that she was too ambitious. Now they were all dead. Timber pleads with her, attuning the old rhythms. "I'm the wrong one," Venli said to annoyance. "I can't do this, Timber. I can't resist him. I made this happen. Don't you realize that? I'm the one who caused all this. Don't plead to me." Eshernai had been exemplary, a general and a hero. Eshernai had done her duty. All Venli had ever wanted was power. Timber hides as the Everstorm approaches. "How long can you keep being two people, Venli?" she seemed to hear Eshernai's voice. "How long will you vacillate?" The storm hit and she entered some kind of vision. She opened her eyes, finding herself standing on a platform hanging high in the sky, far above Roshar. Behind her was a deep black nothingness, marred only by a tiny blip that could have been a single star. That yellow-white star expanded toward her at an awesome speed, swelling, growing, until it overwhelmed her with an incredible flame. "You are not telling the story well enough," Odium's voice declared. "You grow restless. The Fused inform me of it. This will change, or you will be destroyed." Yes, Lord. You are mine. Remember this." She was vaporized completely, and woke on the floor. Trembling, she squeezed her eyes shut. "Can't do it. You've got the wrong sister." The wrong sister had died. The wrong sister lived. Venli had schemed to return their gods. This was her reward. And that is the end of the last interlude for this part.
Oof.
We start now with part 4, which is titled Defy Sing Beginnings. The point of views for this part are Adolin, Shallan, Kaladin, Dalinar, Navani, Zeth, Taravangian, and Venli.
So everyone?
Wait till we get to the part 5 list of POVs.
Wait, Moash isn't in there. So everyone except Moash.
Chapter 88 is titled Voices. It has Dalinar's flashback symbol, and it is 8 years ago. It starts, "Gavilar was starting to look worn." "He's looking so old," Dalinar thought. "Gray before his time." Dalinar didn't need to participate in the meeting. His job was to loom. Occasionally, one of the younger men would glance and see the Blackthorn there in shadow, watching. He saw fires reflected in their eyes and heard the weeping of children in the back of his mind. "Don't be weak. It's been almost 3 years. 3 years, living with what he'd done. 3 years wasting away in Kolinar. He'd assumed it would get better. It was only getting worse. Sadeas had made it sound like the Rift had forced Dalinar's hand by killing Evie, and while Gavilar had denounced what Dalinar and Sadeas had done, he had also made it clear that he was willing to use the Blackthorn as a last resort. Dalinar slips away from the meeting and makes his way to his own rooms. He'd moved himself and his sons into the royal palace as his own home reminded him too much of Evie. He wanted to get a drink from his room, but was driven away by the incense that Renarin was burning. The smell reminded him too much of Evie. Instead, he went down to the king's throne room and found where servants readied food. Gavilar complained at how much Dalinar drank, but what else did soldiers do when not at war? Didn't he deserve a little relaxation after all he'd done for his kingdom? The cupboards were empty. Had Gavilar moved the wine? The king thought him a drunkard, but Dalinar indulged only on occasion. On bad days, drink quieted the sounds of people crying in the back of his mind.
On bad days, weeping. Which are all days.
Weeping, children burning, begging their fathers to save them from the flames, and Evie's voice accompanying them all. When was he going to escape this? He was becoming a coward. Nightmares when he tried to sleep, weeping in his mind whenever he saw fire. Storms take Evie for doing this to him. If she'd acted like an adult instead of a child, she wouldn't have gotten herself killed. He leaves and runs right into a group of soldiers. Adolin is among them, and Dalinar keeps a distance between them, only addressing his son formally and mentally criticizing Adolin's fancy outfit. Adolin says that he has a dueling bout planned that will bring him closer to winning his blade, and Dalinar says that he'll be there watching like a proud military commander. Dalinar walked off as quickly as he could. He needed a drink now more than ever. He slipped away from the main palace and headed over to the beggar's porch, a small patio where a group of miserable people would wait for offerings from the king. He walked over to a man named Ahu, who was huddled between two large religious statues. Ahu was an odd one, even for a crazy beggar. With black matted hair and a scraggly beard, his skin was dark for an Alethi. His clothing was mere scraps and he smelled worse than the compost. Somehow, he always had a bottle with him. Ahu giggled at Dalinar. "Have you seen me?"
"I can smell him. I can exactly imagine and practically smell what this guy must smell like."
Dalinar takes a drink from Ahu and asks the other man how the voices are today. Soft today, they chant about ripping me apart, eating my flesh, drinking my blood. Pleasant. Nice. Not bad at all, little child. What of your noises? Avin Baga, Ahu said. It is a fine night for my torment, and no telling the skies to be still. Where is my soul, and who is this in my face? You're a strange little man, Ahu. Ahu cackled his response. I like you. I like the pain in your eyes. Friendly pain. Companionable pain. Thanks. Which one got to you, little child? The Blackfisher? The Spawning Mother? The Faceless? Moloch is close. I can hear his wheezing, his scratching, his scraping at time like a rat breaking through walls. I have no idea what you're talking about. Madness? I used to think it wasn't my fault, but you know, we can't escape what we did. We let them in. We attracted them, befriended them, took them out to dance, and courted them. It is our fault. You open yourself to it, and you pay the price. They ripped my brain out and made it dance. I watched. And Dalinar leaves this man and stumbles back to his room. Ahu is an interesting little guy. So I will remind you, way back in The Way of Kings, in the very first, not in the very first chapter, in the prologue, when Zeth is going to assassinate Dalinar, he walks by a statue, like a bunch of statues of the Herald, and then runs into a man who goes, "Have you seen me?"
So he was there the night Gavilar died, which is all we know. Because he's standing near the same religious statues, it seems, as that same night.
And he says, "Have you seen me?"
The only thing I'm getting from this is possibly Harold, but, like, his name doesn't match.
So, I won't tell you which one this is, but it is a Harold. This is another Harold that was there the night that Gavilar died. Have you seen me is him referring to the statue standing right next to him. You will find out who it is by the end of the book specifically. But yes, this is one of the Harolds. Yeah, this book, you'll find out who this is. They'll say his name. So Dalinar gets back to his rooms and he hears voices from the inside. "I'm worried about him, Uncle," Adolin's voice said. "Your father never adjusted to being alone, Adolin," the king replied. "He misses your mother." Idiots, Dalinar thought. He didn't miss Evie. He wanted to be rid of her. Though he did ache now that she was gone. Was that why she wept for him so often? "He's down with the beggars again," another voice said from the inside. Elokar? That little boy? Why did he sound like a man? He was only... how old? He tried the serving room again first. Seems he forgot he drank that all last time. Honestly, if there's a bottle hidden in this place anywhere, that drunken fool will find it. "My father is not a fool," Adolin said. "He's a great man, and you owe him your..." "Peace, Adolin," Gavilar said. "Both of you hold your tongues. Dalinar is a soldier. He'll fight through this. Perhaps if we go on a trip, we can distract him from his loss. Maybe Aesir?" He had just rid himself of Evie's weeping, but hearing this dragged her back. Dalinar gritted his teeth and stumbled to the door. Inside, he found the nearest couch and collapsed. And that is the end of the chapter. Let me really quickly grab some art for you that I believe I already have. It is a map of Shadesmar. Specifically, it is the Sea of Lost Light. I rode that mandra from here to Celebrant, so you owe me those silver pieces after all. And it is my personal map of the requested area, including notes from my previous errands. So this is Naz's map, who's the guy that does the annotations. And he's marked where Kolinar is, which is at the top of the map. There is a city called Celebrant in the middle of the map, which is important. And then at the bottom of the map is Thalen City. And you can kind of tell if you look at this. Anywhere that is land on Roshar is sea on this map. And where the rivers and lakes are and oceans is land on this map. Chapter 89 is titled Damnation. It has Adolin's symbol and the epigraph reads, "My research into the Unmade has convinced me that these things were not simply spirits of the void or nine shadows who moved in the night. They were each a specific kind of Spren endowed with vast powers." From Hesse's Mythica, page 3. So Mythica is a book that Shallan got in the last part that is about the Unmade. It's like a research book about the Unmade. And that is where we get our epigraphs for this part from. Chapter 89 is titled Damn... oh, I already read all that. Adolin's POV. So we start in Adolin's POV. Adolin thinks that they've died and gone to damnation. They're on a white platform in the middle of a sea of beads, a black sky overhead with clouds that lead to a tiny, distant sun on the horizon. Tens of thousands of flames hover above the ocean. Spren swarmed in the ocean and howled. Kaladin bursts with stormlight and floats into the air, which draws the attention of the beads and the Spren that swam among them. Syl shouts that he'll draw the Spren like that. Kaladin asks where their soldiers were, and Shallan says that they're on the other side and that they're probably safer. Some of the lights nearby vanished. Beneath them, deep in the beads, something enormous shifted. Syl begs Kaladin to release his stormlight, and he does so finally. Azor says that she passed through Shadesmar when she came to Roshar about a year ago, but had been with guides at the time. Adolin put his hand to the side to summon his own shard blade. The woman with the scratched eyes stretched her head toward him in an unnatural way, then screeched with a loud, piercing howl. Adolin stumbled away. Pattern tells Adolin that the Spren is his sword and that he will not be able to summon her here. He also says that the large Spren floating above them are the Spren of the Oathgate, and that he thinks that the Spren shifting beneath them is one of the Unmade. Adolin realizes that the Spren swarming them are fierce Spren, but that only the antenna of these eel-like creatures manifest in the physical realm. So, like, fierce Spren appear as, like, these kind of floating balls. And he's like, wait, I recognize the floating balls on the top of their antennas, but, like, there's a whole fucking animal attached to them on this side. Shallan says that they need to get off the platform, but trails off as she looks at Kaladin. The bridgeman knelt on the stone, head bowed, shoulders slumped. Kaladin's Spren stood beside him, one hand resting protectively on his back. Kaladin's not well, she said. I have to be well, Kaladin said. Azure says that in Shadesmar there is land where there is water on Roshar, and suggests they try to reach the river outside Kolinar, which Adolin is able to spot as a stretch of land in the distance. In the near distance, a single spire of rock broke the surface. As it grew to the height of a building, a joint appeared. It was a claw. More emerged in other directions. An enormous hand was reaching slowly upward. Deep beneath them, a heartbeat began sounding. And we shift over to Shallan's point of view. Yes. Shallan kneels over the side of the platform, grabbing the different beads and getting impressions of different objects in the physical realm. She sucked in a little stormlight, and like back in the physical realm, the Spren didn't seem to notice her as much as they did Kaladin. When she pressed her hand against the ocean of beads, stormlight within her, the beads clicked together. Pattern points at one of the beads, which is the soul of a shield on the other side. She grabs it, and when she presses her other hand to the ocean, the beads lock together, forming an imitation of the shield. It could hold Pattern without sinking, so now she just needed something big enough for all of them. So yeah, if she, like, grabs a specific, like, a bead that represents whatever specific item, and then, like, she can cause that the beads around her to form into that item.
That's cool. Can anyone do that, or just her?
I think it's just her. Shallan tells Azure and Adolin to help her search through the beads and tells Kaladin to see if he can brood the place into submission. Don't think about that haunted look in his eyes, Shallan thought. Don't think about what you've done in bringing us here, or how it happened. Don't think, Shallan. Her mind went blank, then locked on to her task. Find a way out. She explains to Adolin and Azure how to touch the beads and get an impression of what they are on the other side. They get to work with Azure getting the hang of it, but Adolin can't seem to make it work.
It's funny hearing you struggle to pronounce it correctly.
So Azure is able to, like, touch the beads and see in her mind what they represent on the other side, but Adolin is not able to. The little flames moved, and when one brushed against Shallan, she could feel that it was Drahi, the bridgeman. She could feel his emotions for a moment, his worry and panic. So the little flames that are floating are like the souls of men. She was worried about what would happen to their squires without her or Kaladin. She grabbed a bead that was the palace's gate, and one that was, unfortunately, the palace itself. She held the entire palace in her hand, and it was far too much. She dropped it and moved on. She's getting hit with a brick when she picks up the the palace.
She could literally turn the... If she wanted to, she probably could turn the palace into, like, gas.
It would be a hell of a feat.
It would, but she probably could accomplish. Do it.
Finally, she finds the sphere that represents the Oathgate control building. She presses Stormlight into it, and the ocean of beads click together to form a copy of the building on this side, the rooftop without within their reach. They all climb onto the replica of the control building, and Shallan finds that she can't make it move once she's created it. So instead, they start this leapfrog maneuver where she summons the control building, then the gate that she picked up. They all move onto the gate, then she drops the control building on the other side and repeats over and over again. Each time it took Stormlight, though, she was able to reclaim most from each. Pattern points out that the flames that represent souls have stopped disappearing, so the people of Kolinar must be surrendering. They finally relax a little bit once they get outside of the range of the giant hand that had been stretching up. Syl says that the Oathgate Spren must have been corrupted by Odium, since one of them was now red, and that was why they'd been transferred to Shadesmar instead of Urithiru. Sajan Not, Shallan thought, said she was supposed to kill us, but that she'd try not to? She doesn't dwell on this, and she gets back to work. And we cut back to Adolin's point of view. Adolin feels completely useless and out of his element in Shadesmar. During this whole scene, they're inching along with the door and building trick. He notices that Kaladin is lagging behind while Syl tries to urge the Bridgemen onward. Adolin takes the pack from Kaladin to try and help. "Hey," Adolin said, "it will be all right." "I survived Bridge 4," Kaladin growled. "I'm strong enough to survive this." "I'm pretty sure you could survive anything. Storms, Bridge Boy. The Almighty used some of the same stuff he put into shard blades when he made you." Kaladin continues to lag behind. "I couldn't make them see," Kaladin whispered. "I couldn't protect them. I'm supposed to be able to protect people, aren't I?" "Hey," Adolin said, "you really think that strange Spren with the weird eyes is my sword?" Kaladin scowled. "Yes, Adolin, I thought that was clear. I was just wondering. What do you think about this place? Have you ever heard of anything like it? Do you have to talk right now, Adolin? I'm frightened. I talk when I'm frightened." Kaladin glared at him. "I know little of this place, but I think it's where Spren are born." Adolin keeps Kaladin talking, lightly urging him onward as Syl stood nearby but let Adolin take the lead. They reach land, and Adolin leaves Kaladin with Syl. He turns and looks at Azure as her hair fades from Alethi black to a faint gray. He wonders how much she knows of Shadesmar. He climbs back onto the platform to help Shallan off, who looks like she's about to collapse. She loses control of it, but luckily they're only waist deep in the beads as the platform dissipates. He drags her up to land. Shallan says that she needs a little bit of rest, and Kaladin says that they can't afford to rest, that they need to get back to the physical realm to help the others. Adolin says that they're camping there for now and doesn't let Kaladin argue with him. Adolin looked one last time at the city, standing witness to the fall of his birthplace. Elokar is dead. Little Gav had been taken, and Dalinar was planning to abdicate. Third in line was Adolin himself, king. And that is the end of the chapter.
Oh yeah, because Dalinar is now in charge of Urithiru, which means he's not in line for the throne. That does make Adolin king.
We're going to do one more chapter tonight, which is chapter 90, and it is titled Reborn, and it has Zeth's symbol. The epigraph reads, "I've done my best to separate fact from fiction, but the two blend like mixing paint when the Voidbringers are involved. Each of the Unmade has a dozen names, and the powers ascribed to them range from the fanciful to the terrifying." From Hesse's Mythica, page 4. The chapter starts, "Zeth, Sun-Sun, Zeth, Sun, Zeth, Truthless, Zeth, Just Zeth, Zeth of Shinovar, once called the Assassin in White, had been reborn. Mostly.
Kinda.
Zeth walked with five other Skybreaker hopefuls on a stone field outside their fortress that overlooks the Pier Lake. The other five kept their distance from him, seemingly disturbed by the glowing afterimage he left behind when he moved. Not all could see it, but ones close to the surges could. And Sanderson has said that Lyft can see it even better because of what happened with the Night Watcher."
Mm-hmm.
"Oh, it's the lake," the sword said in his mind. "You should draw me, Zeth. I would love to see the lake. Vasher says there are magic fish here. Isn't that interesting?" "I have been warned, Sword Mimi. Zeth reminded the weapon, not to draw you except in the case of extreme emergency, and only if I carry much stormlight, lest you feed upon my soul. Well, I wouldn't do that. I don't think you're evil at all, and I only destroy things that are evil. Zeth still wasn't sure what sort of test Nail had meant by giving him the sword. There were about 50 Skybreakers here watching the Hopefuls. Apparently, dozens more were out on missions. An entire order of Knights Radiant had survived. Zeth would join them. He would accept their training, then travel to his homeland of Shinovar. There he would bring justice to the ones who had falsely exiled him. Do I dare bring them judgment? A part of him wondered. Dare I trust myself with the Sword of Justice? The Sword replied, You? Zeth, I think you're super trustworthy, and I'm a good judge of people. I was not speaking to you, Sword Nimi. I know, but you were wrong, and so I had to tell you. Hey,
Sword Nimi? That's what they're calling Nightblood?
He calls him Sword God, is what Nimi means. It means God. So he's calling him Little Sword God.
That's uncomfortable.
I know, but you were wrong, and so I had to tell you. Hey, the voices seem quiet today. That's nice, isn't it? Nin had not healed Zeth's madness. He'd called it an effect of Zeth's connection to the powers and said that he was hearing trembles from the spiritual realm, memories of the dead he'd killed. He no longer feared them. He had died and been forced to return. He had failed to join the voices, and now they had no power over him. Right? Why, then, did he still weep in the night, terrified? One of the Skybreakers, Ki, stepped forward. She was speaking to the Skybreaker hopefuls. She's boring, the sword said. Where did Nail go? You said he was boring too, Sword Nimi. That's true, but interesting things happen around him. We need to tell him that you should draw me more often. Ki tells the hopefuls that they have been deemed worthy of the first ideal and tells them to speak it. Vasher always drew me, the sword said, sounding resentful. Life before death, Zeth said. Strength before weakness. Journey before destination. The other five belted it out. Zeth whispered it to the voices that called to him from the darkness. Let them see. He would bring justice to those who had caused this. He was still unable to draw in light, and Ki says that with the swearing of the first ideal, they are all pardoned of previous misdeeds or sins, and that they have the proper paperwork for it. She says that once one of the Skybreakers takes you as a squire, you will be able to speak the second ideal and learn the lashings. Then they will need to impress a high spren to become a full Skybreaker. And Zeth asks if Ki has spoken all five ideals, and she says that it has been centuries since someone swore the fifth ideal. One becomes a full Skybreaker at the third ideal, which is the ideal of dedication. And Zeth is like, whoa, you're just gonna tell us what the ideals are? And she's like, yeah, I'll spell them all out for you. She says the first ideal is the ideal of radiance. The second ideal is the ideal of justice, which is an oath to seek and administer justice. The third ideal is the ideal of dedication, where you must bond to a high spren, then swear to dedicate yourself to a greater truth, a code to follow. And that's when they're taught the other surge that they can use, which is called division, which is apparently a very dangerous surge. And the fourth ideal is the ideal of crusade. You choose a personal quest and complete it to the satisfaction of your high spren. Fourth ideal skybreakers are masters. Cleanse Shinovar, Zeth thought. That would be his quest. And then she says that the fifth ideal is the ideal of law. You must become law. Become truth. This confuses Zeth as he was told by Nail to follow the law, and one of the Skybreakers says that the law must come from somewhere. But they tell Zeth not to worry about the fifth ideal as he will never swear it. Most Skybreakers only swear the first three, and then some take decades to move from the third to the fourth. The Skybreakers lashed the hopefuls into the air to take them to the place where they would be tested. Zeth says that Nail had implied that he would be treated differently. The Herald, Ki said, originally thought that you might skip to the third ideal because of your past. He is no longer here, however, and we cannot judge. You'll have to follow the same path as everyone else. Zeth nodded. No further complaints? Ki asked. It is orderly, Zeth said, and you have explained it well. Why would I complain? Ki lashed him to the sky. For a moment, he felt the freedom of flight, reminding him of his first days holding an honor blade long ago, before he'd become truthless. No, you were never truthless. Remember that. I like it up here. You can see everything. Can you actually see things, Sword Nimi? Not like a man. You see all kinds of things, Zeth. Except, unfortunately, how useful I am. And that is the end of the chapter and where we will leave off for tonight. Nightblood! I told you Nightblood is, like, in the book.
Yeah.
he's just here.
Vasher used to wield me all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, sure, Nightblood. Sure he did.
Yeah, also, yeah, that totally would have gone over your head.
Yeah, dude, the whole time I'm reading that, I'm like, who the fuck is Vasher? Why is it dangerous to draw the sword?
I forgot what he goes by in this book. What does he go by in this
Zahel.
Book? Zahel.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't have known that. Is there any way of knowing that Zahel is Vasher? Does he ever say it?
They never say Vasher's name unless Nightblood is saying it. But, like, you don't... Nightblood doesn't make the connection to some dude that, you know, Zeth has never met, you know? Like,
no, I don't mean does Nightblood say it. I mean, how do you know that Vasher is Zahel?
It's the fact that he's here, Nightblood's here, what's her name? Vivenna's here. So in Words of Radiance, we get an interlude from his point of view, and he talks about how he expects to hear voices in his head, but he hadn't heard a voice in his head for a long, long time. Talking about Nightblood. We will later on see him awaken stuff. Not in this book, but...
Okay.
He does some stuff in book four. It's... In the books, it's... You have to make the connection yourself.
So there was a long period of time where people just probably wouldn't have figured out that, oh, this is Vasher.
Yeah. People really only knew in Words of Radiance because I think there was a Q&A around the time that Words of Radiance came out where somebody was like, hey, when are we going to get the sequel to Warbreaker? Like, I want to know more about what's up with Vasher. And Brandon was like, what are you talking about? You just saw him again. And they were like, what do you mean we just saw him again? And he was like, you saw Nightblood too. And they were like, oh yeah, that was Nightblood. Wait, the guy who heard voices, was that Vasher? And he was like, yeah, that was Vasher. And then as we go on through the books, it becomes more clear.
So in the books, they don't say, and you wouldn't know for a long time, but Brandon just said it. Brandon spoiled it.
I feel like in that case, it's okay. Because, like, I'm going to be honest with you. Him being Vasher so far isn't a big deal. For the purposes of this podcast, I tell you these things because we're not going to read these again, you know? And, like, if we have a moment 3 years from now where he does say his name, you won't remember it, you know? So, like, there's no... For the purposes of this, there's no point in me holding back certain information until it gets revealed half a year later. In this scenario, like, Sanderson does a very good job of keeping it so that, like, Vasher and Vivenna and Nightblood are around, but they don't, like, take over the story. Nightblood is, of the three, Nightblood probably plays the biggest role in the story because he's with Zeth, but, like,
which means he's directly involved in the plot with Zeth.
Yes. Vasher and Vivenna are around. Vivenna's not gonna... We're gonna get to a point in this book where Vivenna's gonna leave. Like, Vivenna's now is not now a main character of Stormlight Archive.
Yeah, also, when, like, did she learn how to fight that well?
Who knows how long it's been? Once you become a world hopper, there are multiple ways to stop aging. But I do think she is old at this point.
Oh,
I think that she's... And I think that's why she's like a good fighter now. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think everybody on Noltis that they knew is probably dead at this point.
Which is kind of sad for her to know, like, hey, yeah, your baby sister had a whole life and now she's dead. And you're still alive world hopping.
And Warbreaker doesn't do a great job of, like, reminding you of this later in the books, but they did have two other siblings. That are probably also dead. Yes, that is part four. I love part four. It's sad because Kaladin is sad and Dalinar is not okay.
And now Adolin has to deal with being king.
And Adolin, like, we're starting to hit... we're starting to finally hit Adolin's arc that I really like, which he kind of talks about a little bit at the beginning of this one of the chapters we covered today, where he's like, I am useless. And one of the things that Sanderson does a really good job of dealing with as we go forward is how Adolin feels about the fact that, like, he was one of the greatest duelists in the kingdom, and now he is inconsequential in next to the power of these essentially gods. Like, he says when he sees Kaladin, like, fly into the air during the Battle of Kolinar, he's like, we're in an era of gods now. And as we're gonna go on, Adolin is gonna have to deal with that, that feeling of like
inferiority, like
losing his place and inferiority. Yeah.
Yikes.
And
I mean, even the girl he's betrothed to has magic powers. Like,
yes, even she's much stronger than he is. In terms of, like...
Speaking of, Shallan, I hope that you're okay with becoming queen as soon as you get married, because, if you guys end up actually getting married, because,
You would become queen.
Yeah.
You know what? I think she'd be a great queen.
Well, queen consort, though, depending on how they do their royalty and...
I think they called Aes Sedain the queen consort.
Okay. So she would become queen consort.
Anybody's better than Aes Sedain.
True. Well, I mean, Shallan's also crazy, but she's not crazy enough.
She's not evil.
She's not evil.
Oh, okay, so next time we have a Dalinar flashback, that made me cry when I read it the first time.
If anything, Shallan would probably just create a version of herself that's a good queen. And then create an alternate version of herself that doesn't have to act like a queen so she can sneak off and do whatever she wants. This is interesting now. Like, Dalinar's gonna have to deal with, hey, your nephew is dead, and now your son is king because...
And your great-nephew is being held captive by the enemy.
Oh yeah, that too.
Like, Gav is, as far as we know, still alive. The Voidbringers have him.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought they just carried him back off into the palace. I thought it was, like, one of the people working for the
queen. Was the palace guard, but, like, might as well be the Voidbringer.
So, well, like, yeah, but he's in the palace with the queen being held with...
Assuming she's
the palace alive. Guard.
She wasn't doing great when we last saw her. Her body was starting
The queen?
Yeah, I think the last time they saw her, she was walking down the steps and there were crystals growing out of her skin.
Yeah.
So,
I didn't assume that was meaning she was gonna die.
I mean, it might be okay. I honestly don't really know, how that worked out for her.
But You don't remember?
I don't remember how that worked out for her. In my mind, I would think not well. Humans kind of need certain organs.
Well, yeah, but I mean, I assumed that it was just, like, her fused, made her grow crystals into, like, kind of, like, listener, singer, shell plate stuff.
So much shit happening. Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about, like, what was happening, but I can't remember all the details. It's like a horror movie when that happens, and I try to block it out as much as I can. I did.
And you don't remember.
I there's a lot of these books, you know, and there's a lot that happens. The end of this book, like, there is still, we still have more left in this book, like, in the climax, than, like, both of the last books combined, in terms of shit that happens. Like in terms of their endings. Like, so, thanks guys for listening. We have a Discord server. The link is in the episode description. You guys can follow us at Twitter at SpeakStormlight. Email us at speakthewordsasp@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter at Sean_AFK. And as always, our cover is made by our good friend, Alx, at Alx_BigBoy. Go drop them a follow.
Life before death, strength before weakness, journey before destination.